You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
When Toronto's new mayor, Rob Ford, was inaugurated last month, he invited hockey commentator Don Cherry as a special guest. In his speech, Cherry spoke about left-wing kooks and bicycle-riding pinkos. By contrast, Cherry characterized himself as patriotic and church-going. He later described Mayor Ford as honest and truthful. The framing wasn't accidental. We, Cherry and Ford, are simple ordinary guys, and they are the rarefied elite. Except that Cherry and Ford are anything but ordinary guys. Both are, in fact, millionaires. Brian Topp says that progressives need to pay attention to scenes like this. It's precisely this kind of framing that conservatives use to attract working class and middle class voters. Brian Topp is executive director of ACTRA and has served as the NDP's national campaign director. He writes regularly for the Globe and Mail, and he joins me by phone from Toronto. Hello, Brian.
Hello.
Now, in a recent article that you wrote on Ford's inauguration, you cautioned against dismissing Ford or Cherry or their tactics. Why is that?
Well, these two gentlemen are not clowns, and they are not fools, and they are not dumb. They know exactly what they're doing. And, you know, if you listen to what Don Cherry said exactly, I mean, you've got, had it right in your intro, but there was another little phrase that was very interesting. What he said is, it's time for blue-collar people to be running City Hall. And that is how he frames himself. We're blue-collar people. And, of course, as you just said, in fact, he is a millionaire, and he is a performer, and which I celebrate, by the way. And he was putting the chain of office around another millionaire. And so the frame that they were putting up, which is just ordinary folks taking things over, bringing some common sense to City Hall, is absolutely not what was happening in that scene. What was happening in that scene was a very wealthy man was taking office on a very conservative agenda that is that doesn't help working people or middle-class families. And so this is important to understand, that these are not fools, these are not clowns, these are people who know exactly what they are doing, and they are appealing to middle-class, working-class electorates, trying to persuade them to vote against their own interests. And they have been very successful. I think it's important to understand that in order to counter it.
Now, Cherry and Ford, as we both mentioned, are wealthy people. Why is it that few media sources point this out?
Well, I think you learn in politics never to criticize people who own tons of ink, but I guess we could say that there isn't lots of space in today's commercial media for that kind of criticism. And that at the end of the day, Mr. Ford, Mr. Cherry, that they're the kind of people that a lot of our media like to see in office. So it's not surprising that we don't see lots of criticism of them. Although, to be fair, you know, there's been no lack of criticism of these folks in the media. But because of the way it was framed, and I guess this is another one of my points, because of the way it was framed, it ends up helping them. When you try to take on a very smart right-wing populist who is waging a very canny appeal to working class, to middle class voters, and what you do is laugh at them and claim he's a clown, what you end up doing is making them stronger. And so it's the lines of attack that voices in the media, voices in the opposition tried to use to stop these people ended up strengthening them. Arguably exactly the same thing has happened with Stephen Harper. And so laughing at them, dismissing them, calling them kooks, calling them clowns, does not work against right-wing populists.
Now, you've taken the opposite point. In your article, you point out that Mayor Ford has spent a lot of time studying working-class voters, and conservatives like him have done so. What have they found? What have they discovered that they're now putting to use?
Well, what I write about in this article is an interesting website by the American Enterprise Institute, which is an American think tank. One of the innumerable American think tanks funded through by companies with blue chip corporate boards, as the American Enterprise Institute is. We had a very interesting article on that website which quotes a former deputy chief of staff to Stephen Harper and quotes him as an expert on working class voters, not just in Canada but in Australia and in Britain and the United States. And so, but the article, you know, does a fairly detailed interview with this gentleman. and picks his brain on how conservatives can appeal to working class voters. And the gentleman, Mr. Mitart, who's was a senior official to Mr. Harper, is a careful student of working class voters and points out how conservatives can appeal to them successfully. And so, the article is worth a read. I commend it to you. It makes a number of points about working class voters and about buttons that conservatives can press to get them to vote against their own interests, basically. And I argue that the strategy that's being followed there is very widely used all around the English-speaking world by conservatives these days. So it's how Mr. Howard got himself elected as Prime Minister of Australia. It's buttons that Margaret Thatcher used in her campaigns. It's buttons that Ronald Reagan used. And by the way, it's buttons that Richard Nixon used. And so, you know, people on the progressive left think they've got a monopoly in speaking for and appealing to working-class voters, but the political record of the last 30 years proves that it's not true. The conservatives are very actively engaging with progressive people for that vote, and it's important to understand what they're up to. This is why, for example, just make one other point, you know, why is it that so much of Stephen Harper's legislative agenda these days is about justice bills? When you look at what actually got through Parliament in the last session, most of what this conservative government actually got through Parliament were justice bills. And if you look at what are they advertising about, they've had a huge campaign going on for the last couple of months about victims of crime. Why are they doing that? Because that is a button that they can, this is well known in British Columbia, of course, you know, the debate about justice issues in BC. It's a button conservatives like to press, even if crime rates are dropping, to persuade working people to vote for them against their own interests.
So we've got sort of the law and order, crime and justice agenda and that issue that conservatives use. What other issues are they using to appeal to voters?
So in this article that I'm referring to, there's a pretty sophisticated analysis of what kind of buttons conservatives can press. And some of the important ones are the fact that working class people resent being insulted and patronized by elites. And so you can see how conservatives move to exploit this through, for example, the Timmy's versus Starbucks campaign that they have been waging against recent Liberal leaders. So why is it that they make so much of, you know, the fact that the current Liberal leader is a kind of disconnected, elitist, BOMO intellectual, right? The reason why they're doing that is they're trying to say, we're just ordinary folks, and that guy's an elitist who looks down on you. That's a powerful theme in working class voters and a big part of Mr. Ignatieff's problem. Another theme that they like to push at is the very strong streak in working class, middle class voters of pride in their country and patriotism. And so this is why this government has given such a strong embrace to the Canadian military and has kind of, you know, tried to make themselves the military party. Who sends their sons and daughters into the military? It's working class people, middle class people. So the conservatives hug that military. They say they're the military. They will defend our country. They will stand by our soldiers. And the other, the not us, the progressive people, they love our enemies. They will not defend our country. You can't rely on them. So these themes are used mercilessly in the United States against Democrats and in the kind of, you know, talking through pillow ways that we do politics in Canada. The conservatives are using those themes here, too.
Well, it's really interesting because later in the show we're going to be playing a talk that happened this week in Vancouver, and I know there was a talk in Toronto by Richard Wilkinson who talks about how unequal societies kind of end up with all these, you know, worse social indicators, and the same conservative forces that are increasing this inequality across society are using that disenfranchisement that often, you know, comes from those unequal societies to actually boost their own agenda and popularity.
This is very, very, very important piece of analysis in two fronts. That on the one hand, that conservative economics, conservative fiscal policy and social policy leads to increasingly grossly unequal societies. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. We face income inequality in the English-speaking world that we haven't seen since the 1920s, and with all the consequences that flow from that. And that helps create conditions, including disenfranchised and alienated electorate, a working-class electorate that are the big losers in this thing, that are then open to these populist appeals from the very people who engineered the situation that is impoverishing them. And so it's a kind of a bitter irony, and it is, you know, to be honest with you, a very serious challenge to progressives. You know, how can it be that we are not beating this? And so as we head into another federal electoral cycle, you know, many of us are thinking about this. Like, how can you bell the cat here? How can we succeed in pointing out in clear, vivid language that can cut through a pretty tough media environment in which it is very hard to communicate? How can you get across that at the end of the day, voting to cut taxes and to pay money through the tax system to people who need it least, and to transfer the debt burden to working people against, you know, and to their children and their grandchildren, to dismantle the economy, to privatize public services, to say you're going to retire without a pension, to do all that stuff is against the interests of most people and in the interests of a very small group? And how can you articulate an agenda that is more compelling than vote for me and we'll send you a $50 check, which is what the conservatives do to get themselves elected?
You're asking some pretty compelling questions there. Are there strategies that you see that progressives can put in place to counter what conservatives are doing?
Well, I mean, I don't have all the answers, that's for sure. But, you know, you can see, as and in the talk you're referring to, you know that many people are thinking about it. I guess my opinion in the first instance is that we need to name the enemy, and we need to point out what they're doing, just part of, I guess, what we're doing in this conversation today. And then we need to put up something better. And it's not, you know, Carl Sagan proposals, you know, the billions here and the billions there, the way the progressives have sort of fallen into talking about government and about public policy is incomprehensible to most people. And we need to rethink the way we campaign. We need to rethink what it is we're proposing and be very concrete, very clear, very accessible, and talk about what people care about. So those are simple points, and yet at the end of the day, politics is not complicated. If you want your people's support, then you need to say something to them that they will support.
Are there examples that you can give me of an effective use of practical progressive appeal to the working class?
Well, let me give you a conservative example and then offer you a progressive one. One of the smartest things I think the Harper conservatives did in the 06 campaign was that they reached around the kind of a 20 or 30 year national debate in which progressive people have been talking about child care and about the many burdens the economy and the realities of gender impose on working women, and the slow growing consensus that we need a national child care program. And they reached around that and said, we don't support any of that. What we think is that every woman with a child should get a check from the government, and then you go off and buy whatever you want. In other words, they basically brought back the baby bonus from the 40s and the 50s and blew up, you know, many, many years of work trying to stitch together a national child care program. That was completely against the interests of working women out there. But it was simple, it was clear, and I can tell you from, you know, having done some research on it, many women said, well, at least I'm going to get something. I don't believe in your big program. At least I'm going to get a check. I can remember my mother getting the baby bonus check when I was a kid. That was essentially the only income that actually had her name on it, a check that had her name on it. That was her money. That was a very powerful example of, you know, a sort of an essentially regressive but pretty smart populist conservative appeal to working class and middle class women that helped them get into office. So when you look at, so what can you put up against that, you need to learn that lesson, which is at the end of the day, people are looking for, what can you do that's good for me, as opposed to hiring a bunch of bureaucrats and building more big government that has nothing to do with me. Jack Layton, for example, was out a month and a half ago or so talking about winter's coming, economic times are tough, maybe it's time to give people a break on their heating costs by exempting them from the HST. That is an example, I think, of a smart populist program that speaks very directly to people's needs. And so, I mean, you can debate the specific plank, but it's an example of how when you get more real, you get more concrete, then people will start to listen to you.
Well, it's been excellent talking with you this morning, Brian, and hope we'll talk again soon about this.
Sounds good.
I've been speaking with Brian Topp. He's executive director of ACTRA and has served as the NDP's national campaign director, and he writes regularly for the Globe and Mail.